Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Heck yeah, you bet. We got Midnight Mass, which is a 7-episode extravaganza on Netflix by Mike Flanagan. And there's no way that the two of us could handle this, so we added someone. Who's over there?
It's me, Hannah.
Yes.
My daughter and real Flanagan head.
All right. Excellent. Flanagan head. Yes. So one of the things I learned poking around about this is that Flanagan thought about this for a long time because there was a book called Midnight Mass that showed up in a couple of previous movies.
Really?
Did you guys know that? It was in Hush and it was in Gerald's Game.
Okay. And that's so interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah. So Gerald's Game is the only one of his movies that I could not really get through.
Yeah,
that one was just too much for me. And the book was too. I never read the Stephen King novel either.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that one, that's Stephen King's fault. And you know what? A lot of his books are like that.
Yes.
A lot of his books, he should have been told no more often. Very early on in his career, I think people just stopped doing that. But Mike Flanagan's amazing. We have loved his movies and his shows for a long time. Oculus is one of the creepiest movies I've ever seen. Hush, that we've seen so many of them. But then we have watched his TV shows, but we haven't seen The Fall of the House of Usher yet, or that, what was that one? It was kind of like more for teens, I want to say.
More for teens. The Midnight Club?
Midnight Club, yeah.
Okay.
It just sounds like it's for teens, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I don't actually know, but we haven't seen that one. Yeah, other than that, I mean, we've seen like almost everything he's done.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
I have seen zero until now.
Zero. Well, you're fair. Such a horror movie fan.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't recommend any of the other ones.
So not being a horror movie fan, this one's not too intense for you, is it?
Oh, no. And it's been surprisingly predictable in what's happened so far in the first 4 episodes.
Yeah.
Because he's playing with all the usual tropes of this kind of a horror story. I'm not sure how you want to say, if you want to just do a quick summary.
Yeah, we can do a quick summary, I think that he's playing in Stephen King's sandbox in this whole thing.
Well, I was going to say Jerusalem's Lot, but I didn't want to, or Salem's Lot, but I didn't want to give too much away. So
no,
and they very well could be in a fishing community in Maine.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That's all you really need.
That's right. That's right. Have you ever seen Storm of the Century?
Unfortunately, I have.
Uh-huh.
That bummed me out big time because I have a little boy.
Yes.
And he actually kind of looks like the little boy from Storm
that
of the Century.
That is rough.
It was not
good. Yeah, I hear you.
It's really good,
but
it was not great.
Yeah.
I was a little mad at my husband afterwards because he had seen it before.
So how could you show me that?
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, he does now, I bet.
Yeah.
Well, quick synopsis then. So what we have, it opens with Riley Flynn, who is a 20-something, I would say, who is in a city somewhere in the country, and he had just had this terrible accident, and he's clearly drunk, and the person that he hit is clearly not going to make it, or didn't make it, right? That's the start. We're seeing Riley Flynn, and then we learn that he's from this tiny, tiny town on a tiny, tiny island somewhere. Where is this island anyway? It's in Maine, isn't it? Is it New England or is it? I think it's in New England.
I think it's New England.
Yeah, I would say so too. So from there, it becomes, you know, we pick up Riley's life at the end of his prison sentence, and he's returning. And just like a Stephen King novel, we're in this slow burn of meeting characters and getting to know this small town. Now, at the same time, they have, it's a Catholic small town. It seems like most of the people there are Catholics, and they've got a church there. And the Monsignor, who is elderly, had been sent on a trip to Jerusalem.
And when we say elderly, he's like 80.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who is still a Monsignor when they're 80?
Yeah.
I guess he seemed hale and hearty, but then they just send him by himself to the Holy Land. Sending him
off on a trip? No, 80-year-old? Yeah. He wouldn't even be able to do the plane ride.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. But anyway, it seems like the town sent him on this trip as a gift. They said, you ought to go there, right? That's, I think they said something about him. He always wanted to. Yep.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah. That happened to our deacon. He instantly started leading trips to the Holy Land once a year after that. He loved it so much. So that felt really real to me.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So, what else should we say about it in just general synopsis?
There's the general... Because you know it's a horror story, right? Mm-hmm. And you just don't know what kind of horror story you've fallen into.
And the town is all the people. The town is failing. The fishing is not going well. Hmm. There was an oil spill a while ago. It's never really bounced back from that. All the kids leave. The people who don't leave have problems like alcoholism, and it's not a great place to be.
And you know it's not great because it's complete. The color is so desaturated that even on a bright day, everything looks kind of gray. So it's like there's this miasma hanging over everyone.
Yeah, all the houses are.
Yeah,
kind of. They all need paint, you know.
Yeah. And we're used to stories about fishing towns that are having a hard time making it. And I guess the oil spill is why I had been thinking this was off the coast of Oregon or Washington or somewhere like that. No reason. Yeah. But it does look like New England. But the oil spill gets mentioned a lot. And then some creepy things start happening and you start being able to figure out, oh, it's going to be this kind of a horror story. So that's kind of interesting watching along with that as everybody's story and relationship to each other is kind of unfolding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go along. And there's 7 episodes of that. And the horror starts picking up after maybe at episode 3, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
There's episode 4 is where it really takes off. And that's so Stephen King-like, you know. It's like Salem's Lot. It's like Salem's Lot to me. I just love that novel so very much. But it's like it hits a point and then it gets scary. You know, you've got this scary little just sinister tone. You know, but you're really, it's like really slow, 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 and then bam. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't remember what I was going to say now about all that. And and there's just enough stuff scattered around where people are going, I looked out during that big storm and saw this. And so they're giving little clues that you could think about during those first 2 episodes. But yeah, to me, the third and fourth ones were the same in terms of horror. The same kind of things were happening. It was not exactly, I suppose, but sprinkled between monologues.
Right, right. So yeah, scary stuff starts to happen. So we can move into spoilers from here. If you've seen a Mike Flanagan movie or if you've read a Stephen King novel, I think you kind of know what territory you're in, and I sure enjoyed it and I would recommend it. So, So away we go into spoilers, shall we? Julie has no comment.
I have to see the whole thing.
Yeah, sure. You do. And that's completely fair.
The last 3.
That's completely fair.
I'm feeling so great after the first 4.
We should say that. We've watched episodes 1 through 4 at this point. I've seen them all because I picked this and I said this would be interesting stuff to talk about. And there is just a ton to talk about in it. But there's 7 episodes and we've watched 4. So we'll talk about those 4. So let's see. So the first thing that might be interesting is each episode has a title. And
it's, I know.
Yeah, maybe, and the titles actually are meaningful kind of to what's going on in each story. But the title, like the first episode, is called Genesis, mm-hmm. you know, which has multiple meanings. Mm-hmm. Now, in that, you know, the guy, so there's a guy who comes in. We learn that he's Father Paul Hill. He's dragging a big old trunk. And I love, do we like Neil Diamond or not?
Oh, I grew up with Neil Diamond on the radio. Yeah. So these songs come up and I was like, oh my gosh, so much Neil Diamond. And that's when we had to stop and go, when was this set? But yep. I think it's just because Neil Diamond's songs had enough references to things like God and holy, 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 and this kind of thing. Yeah. And that because what I think happens with the Neil Diamond songs is the same thing that happens with the little introduction or the little titles, which, you know, Psalms, Lamentations, is they're extremely loose. They're not using it in really, to me, a deeply layered way. They'll make a reference to it. You'll see it a couple times, but it's more just like a kind of just a clever reinforcement of something that's happening right at the moment.
Yeah.
Not an overall theme for the entire episode.
And it doesn't come off as unwarranted or like lazy, because they've obviously done so much research into Catholic Mass and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Some of it well presented, some of it completely thrown out the window. That's one of my problems.
They get pretty close, and it's interesting to see what's wrong with some of it. But the Mass they do pretty well on, I think. It's interesting, you know, he offers the body of Christ and he just says, body of Christ, you know, we usually say the body of Christ. I just, you know, so there is just little oddities. And, at the beginning, I don't know if you caught when Father Hill made his first Mass, somebody said, I like the old translation.
Oh, I think that was Paul's, or I mean, Flynn's, no, what's his name?
Yeah,
Riley's dad.
It was the mayor.
Oh, the mayor, the paralyzed girl.
Right. Dad. Yeah. Yeah.
I knew it was one of them.
Right.
Well, yeah, because, and later, of course, it becomes more obvious why he, the priest is using those. But I have to say, a lot of it, they got very right to the point where I was watching going, why is he wearing a golden chasuble? That would be, you know, feast day or something. And sure enough, here comes Bev, the church lady, going, Father, I noticed you weren't wearing green for ordinary time. And I'm like, oh, no, I hate to think I'm that much like Bev, but here we are.
I don't know if he would steamroll it. See, the thing is, though, Bev's nicer to him than to a priest than to anybody else.
Yeah. True. Yeah. You know what we ought to do here is we ought to kind of go through the characters maybe. Maybe that's a good way to talk about this at this point. Okay. So we started with Riley Flynn, who, again, you know, just got out of prison for drunk driving and killing someone. He's still dealing with that in a pretty literally big way.
Every night.
Yeah, I thought that the way that he sees her every night as he's going to sleep, I thought that was such a good way to illustrate the way that it just never leaves you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can deal with something like that, but you can never get away from it.
Yeah.
It's always there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it was, yeah, it's affecting, you know, how it is really a terrific way to show that. I agree with
and
that.
And that's also a common Mike Flanagan thing. So he did a similar thing in Haunting of Bly Manor. And I think there was another thing that he did like that too.
To have someone who's haunted by something.
So yeah. Kind of they like see it like that. In the dark. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So then he's got, his parents still live on the island and he's got a little brother. Little brother's a teenager. So his mom is named Annie, And I'm looking for the name of his dad. Do you, either of you remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, there he is. Ed. So Ed and Annie, and then he's got his little brother. Now, Annie is a very devout Catholic. So is her husband, you know, but Annie seems to be a very kind person. And Ed is really holding some stuff in, lets it out sometimes, but you can tell that he's pretty tight.
And he's still, you know, this is one of the things that, like, I was impressed by when he's like, oh, yeah, so you're not into church anymore? You don't really believe that? Well, obviously, you shouldn't take the Eucharist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was a nice scene there. So very shortly after he being Riley, soon he gets back there having dinner. And, you know, he says, so his little brother is an altar boy like Riley was in the past. They joke around at the table and his dad gets offended. But then he says, you know, yeah, I'm not into this anymore. This is not me, you know, I'm not doing that. And then there's a little argument at the table. Yeah. Yep. Go ahead.
No, sorry. I was just saying, yeah. Yeah, that's.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, that's disrespectful. You're not going to talk about the church
mm-hmm.
and about altar serving. I don't like it.
Yeah.
And it all felt really real to me. I mean, again, that's one of the reasons why I like Stephen King a lot, you know, and Flanagan, he works with Stephen King stuff quite a bit. But it just, all the characters felt real. And, you know, I could understand why Riley would feel the way he feels going through what he did and being as messed up as he is, as far as, you know, reaching for things. And he's just really disoriented, you know, he's the stuff that he's gone through in his life. And I found that pretty moving. I liked Riley quite a bit and how he is throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. And you're supposed to, I mean, he's the primary mover in the, yeah. I mean, you know, we're following him all the way through. He comes and goes depending on whose story is being told, but he's always there.
Yeah.
And
he made this huge mistake. You know,
well, yeah, he made a huge mistake in his life.
Just amazing.
And I think you get the idea that he thought he was bulletproof because he was off the island and he was like trading futures or whatever he was doing, something to make a lot of money. And then he was driving drunk and killed somebody and he can't get over it. But he's back on the island and he can't see a future either. And he can't see hope. And he has a dream every night that is singularly hopeless. He's not allowed to see the sunrise kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so, and I think he views his life now as just penance.
Yeah.
It's a punishment.
Mm. Yeah. So, I'm sorry to jump ahead a little bit, but I'm thinking and talking about his character. One of the things that it could have been a lot shorter, but the thing that he said about what does he think happens after he dies when he's talking with the school teacher who, and I didn't write down anyone's name. So
that's Aaron Green. Yep.
Aaron. Mm-hmm. Okay.
With played Aaron. By Mike Flanagan's wife.
Yep. Kate Siegel. Right.
Lucky man. She's so sweet looking and so pretty.
I know. She's been
a good actress. And
she's in a bunch of his stuff going way back.
Yeah. But she and he are comparing what they think happens when they die. And I guess this is something we could come back to later because.
Well, you can go there if you want. Go ahead.
Well, the thing is, and so he's talking and we all recognize it. It's a very atheistic point of view, very nihilistic, really. You know, it's basically your body decays, all this stuff. Your brain has one last burst of chemicals and you think everything's great. I don't know why they even put that in there because according to them, how would you ever know it happened? But, and then that's it. Then you're done and you go back and you're with the stars because your atoms have all come apart. And that's the only way he can try to make it sound bigger than it is, which is very depressing and very natural and very atheistic, as I said. And then she, having just lost the baby, which was one of the things I thought was actually one of the most creative and interesting bits of logic in the whole thing so far.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I had to think about it afterwards, which is that, again, you have to have seen all this stuff. But if what's happening is everybody who's taking communion is drinking vampire blood and they're becoming younger to a lesser degree than Monsignor did, then when she went backwards, the baby went backwards. And that's why her body never showed any signs of it. And I was like, I remember thinking about that because we're like, what happened? I felt like a real genius.
Yeah.
But her idea of heaven is the most simplistic sounding view. I mean, you know, it's you go up into where it's light and you've never been, you know, sinning and you've never had a bad life because the baby was never born and all these things. And it's just happiness and light. And it kind of sounds like when my sister talks about the universe sending you good stuff, except yeah. God pats you on the head and your family's there to tell you you're great, you know?
Sure.
So this is one of my problems with the way a lot of the religion is portrayed. Most of the technical stuff they get right, because you can, how do you do a mass? Well, we can do that. But they don't really ever talk about religion except as feelings. And you're happy and you're joyful, except for maybe Bev, who's got a lot of other things wrong with it. So they've got something that's heavily centered around the faith, and these people are all very devout, but they're the worst catechized group of people I've ever met. And Monsignor Pruitt is the reason, and he's still doing it, because when he shows up as a priest, he's busy doing deepisms to everybody.
I know.
You know, and mm-hmm. it's very annoying to me that they didn't, if they're going to make this center around religion and go to all this trouble to make it look right on the outside, they don't have to go real deep. They need to go deeper than just the top layer of, and you'll feel good.
I will say, I don't know that it was unrealistic for it to be focused on feelings with where she was when she said that.
Yes. But everybody in that place
You're right.
talks about how they feel. Even the Muslim guy, who's the most admirable in terms of, you know, trying to stick up for his faith and go, son, we've already got God and all this stuff, but he never has anything more than I converted for your mother.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's taking something that is potentially the most interesting thing and looking at how are they going to deal with this in a modern horror movie where they're really trying to take it seriously. And then they refuse to take it seriously. Now, maybe they do better later on in the show. I don't know.
Maybe, but I wouldn't be surprised if this was them trying to take it seriously.
Which is sad.
Because if they don't actually understand the faith, like,
right.
it probably, so look at so much of Protestantism.
It feels real Protestant.
Just about feelings.
Yeah.
That I can imagine that they don't, even if you tried to explain it to them, like, they would never understand where they didn't get it right.
Yeah. And it feels really Protestant, and I'm not saying that in an insulting way, but it's, you know, the fact that the priest can pick out his own thing, his own bit of scripture he wants to preach about, and they're not looking at any of the things that make you have to invest yourself. I mean, other than I killed someone and I feel horribly guilty. I have to say that the guy who's drunk all the time.
Joe.
He's such a sympathetic character.
Good night. You know, I'm surprised he lasted as long as he did, because the first time he was like, I'm going to turn my life around. I was like, oh, I hope you don't get eaten right this second, like as you're walking home. And Mark was like, no, don't say that. That is what's going to happen.
No. And I wasn't thinking about it from that point of view, but I have to say, when the formerly paralyzed girl showed up and said, and here's how I felt all this time, I was like, oh yeah, you've been hiding it and holding it in and all this stuff. But to go back to the religion thing, it's partway through. This is what I just kept going. I feel like if they'd have had a Baptist church, I get Catholicism is so much more iconic for this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if they'd had a real devout bunch of Baptists, it would have rung more true in a lot of ways, because I feel like this more general way of talking about things is what I have experienced.
Different churches. I was going to say, I've heard both those answers to what happens after death. Almost exactly. You know, and the one from Aaron Green, from a Catholic. And I'm not saying that they're well catechized, you know, but I think that some people, you know, come to the church for that reason. And there is a comfort to it, right? And a comfort, you know, a lot of people come to the church. I'm saying a lot, but some people come to the church because of what happens after you die, and they want that answer. And usually where Aaron Green was is where they're starting. You know, I want something like this, right? And then it matures from there. But I think it's important that, do we think Father Paul Hill is a good priest?
No.
Oh, no.
No, we don't, right? So I think that if these guys all grew up with Father Paul Hill, or what his name was before. So we're well into spoiler territory, right? So if they grew up with this guy, that's what they know. And I think that it matches. And I'm not saying that he was a superior priest ever.
No. He's willing. He's shown himself to be willing to justify anything that he wants to do.
Gosh.
He thinks, and talk about feelings. He feels like, I feel like this is maybe the right thing to do. So, this is okay. Like he went into the confessional and confessed a sin before he did it, as if that's a thing that can happen.
he was confessing to just empty space.
I thought you were saying the miracles, because I was thinking, but those weren't in his mind sins. Because I find him interesting in the sense that when he's Monsignor Pruitt and he's telling his story, I liked Mark's idea that it should have been, it's the Middle East and there's a Muslim on the show and everything, and Monsignor Pruitt, and it should have been a genie.
That would be so fun if
instead of just your common old demon.
Well, I think the reason it wasn't is because that's an angel, right? He thinks it's an angel.
Yeah. They have wings.
Yeah. But he couldn't say it's a genie, but I think I see what you're saying, but.
No, he's not saying it's a genie. He's saying he wished they had written it that way. It would have been so much more interesting.
Or even that, like, even now, I mean, this thing has come from the Middle East. Yeah. And so, like, it would be so fun if part of vanquishing it was part of the Islam that Rahul Kohli.
They have to work together.
Yeah.
Because all the elements of faith, because his faith is sincere and true.
Yeah.
And that's cool that you know that actor's name. Do you see him somewhere else, Rahul Kohli?
He was in The Haunting of Bly Manor. He was one of the best things about that show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other best thing about that show was a black woman that I haven't seen in any of his other stuff, but she's British. So, and she might not be willing to travel or able to do an American accent, so it'd be harder to cast her. As it is, Rahul Kohli's accent is like okay. He's English.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it's probably I think it's just because I know that he's English. Sometimes I hear and I'm like, mostly it's pretty good. But he's amazing.
I like him.
That's an interesting character too. So he's Sheriff Hassan. And Joe calls him Sharif.
Omar Sharif.
Yeah, Sharif.
And Bev, I think Bev called him that.
Yeah.
Omar Sharif, which is funny because, it's actually pretty funny.
Well, actually, because he was like, it's Sheriff, you know. Mm. And I was like, yes. And I know they're kind of poking fun in a nice, not nice way, but Omar Sharif was one of the best looking men on earth. I'm just going to say, don't insult that.
So, so Hassan, Sheriff Hassan had moved there not too long before, it doesn't feel like, and took this job to be sheriff of this small town after his wife passed away. So it's him and his son, Ali. And Ali is a teenager about the age as Warren, who is Riley's little brother, and Lisa, who you mentioned was a person in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And there was another one, Uker, I think is his name. Uker, the one who wants to go smoke out in the boonies or whatever.
I was just going to say, did they go to the island together?
Yeah. So, but I liked that character. I mean, fish out of water for sure. Sheriff Hassan trying to get by.
One of the compassionate, understanding people. He sees what's going on better than some other people are willing to admit that they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he's talking to Joe Colley, first of all, he understands Joe Colley, and he understands that he doesn't want to be doing this.
Right.
And he's like, I still have to lock you up for this, but I don't have to like kick you while you're down.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he sits and has coffee with him in the morning after he's fell.
Gotta love that. Yeah.
And, you know, when Joe Colley's like, fine, whatever, like, no one believes me, but I know that Bev poisoned my dog. And he's like, he's like, because Bev, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, I do see Bev.
Yeah.
I see what Bev is.
Yeah.
And you're not wrong about her.
Yeah.
That was a good conversation. Yeah.
But I just have to say that I can't. I don't have any proof.
Yeah.
Not saying she didn't poison your dog. I'm just saying I can't prove it. Her and her rat poison or whatever it is.
Oh, and she is so this is true of everybody on the show, I think, but she is so well cast.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and she did great.
Good job of being this awful person.
Just a church lady.
That will never, ever quit. You can't back her into a corner that she can't get out of. She can never be made to not. She can always pivot.
But they could have
stab it back at you. No, I know.
If the school teacher had been willing to stand up to her,
I know,
and she wasn't, and I was like, "Why are you not standing up to her?"
And that's what
that
it is.
A failure of character.
It's that there's never enough people that are willing to do it.
Yeah,
yeah.
One person by themselves,
well,
usually can't like take on.
Yeah, them. Remember, they're in the wake of a miracle, right? So there's. You know, if you're talking about her in the classroom with Aaron and Sheriff Hassan and a bunch of other townspeople are there, but they just witnessed a miracle, and there's this big upswelling of this must be right. You know, so I thought that rang pretty true. It would have been hard to stand up to her because I think 90% of the town would have been on board. You're saying, yeah, we need more Bibles, right? Or
well,
we need that.
Yeah, you can read it in school and all this kind of thing. I think, but this again, and you're right, Scott, because I know you see a lot more of this than I would because you used to until this year, I guess, teach RCIA. Mm-hmm. And then
OCIA, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, trying to keep from confusing every
it's
right
the order now, right?
Said that for years.
It sounds better.
But also you do the inquiry thing and everything.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking of it, and I get what you're saying, but I'm also looking at it from a TV show storytelling perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I know those things feel real, but my point is if you're going to go to all the trouble getting the Catholic stuff in there, then follow through on what you're doing.
Hmm.
Or just have mass however you want. It doesn't matter. The guy's wearing a collar, you hold the thing up, people will do whatever.
I mean, it could be part of the point, though, that he's a terrible priest.
Well, maybe.
That's
I guess we might find that out.
That's my point, yeah.
I mean, he after the miracle, he's like, what does he say? Hang on.
But that's why all I said was they're horribly catechized, and it started with Monsignor Pruitt, who is now Father Paul. And that's all I'm saying. Catechesis is important.
Right, and this shows why. So it wasn't Father Paul, but someone else was like, well, don't investigate a miracle. And I was like, don't investigate a miracle. What do you think the church's entire deal is?
First thing the church does.
But Father Paul's the last person who's trying to investigate this, and he should be the first person trying to investigate it. And it's this kind of constant failure that, okay, I guess I'm not surprised that he thought some horrifying monster was an angel come to save him. Did you guys notice that when he was at the Wailing Wall, and he turned around and faced the sun, there was like a Nosferatu-style shadow behind him.
I did not see that.
Ooh, I didn't see that either. I got
very good.
Wow. Awesome.
Very good.
Yeah, they got hit with his hat.
And remember, remember that Father Paul, too, he knew what was going on. To him, that wasn't it. Well, it was a miracle, but he knew. He, you know, when Riley was challenging him, he said, how did you know that? You had to have known. He did know.
Yeah.
He absolutely knew. He said, it ought to be about time now that she can do this, right? It was a risk, but yeah.
Yeah. Why do you think he did it so publicly? He's letting Riley get to him when Riley's saying, well, what good did any of these horrible things do? Like, what good came out of that? What good came out of Lisa getting paralyzed? What does the church do for that? He is using these to try to prove that the church is good, as if that needs to be proven through miracles.
And through him.
And through him. Because even Jesus didn't try to take credit like this for miracles.
Jesus,
he kept telling people, stop talking about it.
Yeah, that's not
the
point.
And then everyone said, okay, and ran off and told everybody they met. But
very natural.
Yeah. And just seeing how he thinks of himself. You remember he told the story of Saul. He named himself Paul when he came back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No.
Because he feels like that's what he is, as if St. Paul ever did a single thing after that he hadn't been personally told to do by God or the Holy Spirit. And look at the way he lived his life and look at the way it ended. Y'all are living your lives very differently.
Well, and that's the thing with, I would say the point, one of the things I found interesting about Father Paul, Monsignor Pruitt, is I'm willing to let him think this is a guardian angel because he had Alzheimer's or whatever he had.
I have also.
When he was first attacked.
Yes.
And I thought, okay, you don't know what you're seeing anyway. And you're hearing the voice saying, live, and this is happening. But when you're back to yourself and you have a chance to sort it out and stop and think, then is when you start just lying to yourself.
Well, talk about lying to yourself. He killed Joe.
Well, that's it. And I think
Bev spin it as some kind of...
Oh, okay. I get that a lot of stuff was going on. Rose was even defending this. And I'm just like, I cannot believe two God-fearing people, I don't care how shallow or whatever it is, would let someone talk them into... Don't you judge God for when he does strike someone down versus when he lets somebody walk, blah, blah, blah. And I get she has a lot of strength of personality, but look at what you're seeing, man.
Yeah.
Get the doctor or the somebody. I mean,
I think it's largely because that I feel like can be explained just medically by shock. Because you would be medically in shock seeing that.
Yeah.
Even the body without the priest involved, I think I would be in shock. And I think if you're medically in shock and someone as strong-willed as Bev is slapping you in the face, I think that is where it comes from. Yeah. And then by that point, by the time you recover, you've already helped cover up your body.
Done it.
So then she's got something on you and you're like, oh, okay.
But here's my other thing. I do not understand Bev. And that's, I get she's a true believer, and she's a true believer in a way that leads to Jonestown, I think.
I think that's true, but her whole identity is bound up. She knows this is Monsignor Pruitt. Her whole identity is bound up in him being amazing and righteous and all this stuff. And I think she's unable to handle, not even on a conscious level, I think she's unable to handle the idea that, oh, maybe he kind of sucks.
That anything he did was awful.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the things I liked about that scene a lot was the way Father Paul reacted. He literally did not understand what was going on. And to me, that supports the idea that even though he's a terrible priest, I mean, you know, he can do the Eucharist and so forth, but I mean, he's just an awful priest in terms of serving the people. But he literally really was telling himself that this is an angel.
Yeah.
And that's why the moment at the end of episode 4 is so devastating.
It's so awful.
When he just looks at it and he just goes and shuts the door. And I'm like,
and this is where
you have turned fully.
The addiction ties in.
Yes.
It's not just alcohol. It's not just Riley and Joe Colley. They are showing you, yes, here's what addiction looks like. And then we see, well, Father Paul was, I mean, jonesing big time. He did not care where that blood was coming from. He just was like, where have you been?
Yeah.
And that's all he needs.
Yeah. The show is the big commentary on addiction, definitely. And the way you handle it, the way you let it control you or fight through it, and honestly, I have to say, you know, the director telegraphs everything, which I like to have a few more surprises. I wish he had had the priest actually be very likable. Mm-hmm. Because from the beginning, I kept looking at Father Paul going, there's something uneasy and unsettling about him. And I was like, is it just the actor? And I went, no, every other person is acting exactly how they should for me to like them, not like them, whatever. He's being told to do this. And I was like,
to be fair, though, the actor's name is Hamish. So,
okay, I take it all back. No, but I was looking at it going, okay, so we already know he's the bad guy. We know he has this open coffin looking trunk in his room.
That, like, knocked back at him when he knocked it.
Yes. So, and we know all the dead cats. We know the guy who nobody seems to have noticed is missing at all, who went into the dark house because he was an idiot.
He had to go in the house. If you hear your voice coming out of a house, you go in. That's one of the rules.
You stand there and you say, huh, glowing eyes. Oh, now it's about 7 feet tall. Okay, keep staring.
but no one's noticed he's missing. Have you noticed that? Yeah. No one said, where's so-and-so?
And he goes on boats quite a bit, it looks like. So it might not have been unusual.
The only person who's going to miss him is Joe Colley. And not even that. That scene I really loved. That was scary and I loved it.
Yeah.
But we can't, I have to mention the cats on the beach.
Yeah.
Because my husband was like, the sheriff's on the beach. Everybody's looking at this stuff washing up. He was like, this really makes me think of Jaws.
Yeah.
And which was interesting, but I said something very funny that the world has to hear. It can't just be Mark. He said that. And I was like, Martin, my cats were on that beach too.
Oh, that's the third time I've heard it. It's funny.
Love it. That is great.
Yeah, that's one of my, probably the line I remember most and quote most from Jaws.
That's a great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
But what were you,
what was I ranting about?
Well, we can talk, take a quick aside here, but I loved the scene where they're dealing with the cats on the beach. That looked like one continuous thing for, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes. Did you guys notice that? It was like a continuous. It just looked like one of those scenes where, you know, they try to do it in one take. You know, well, they probably did multiple takes, but you know what I'm trying to say. They're trying to do it without a cut.
Like rope.
Yeah, yeah, like exactly.
That. What I appreciated most is that you could tell they were actually toy cats or stuffed cats of some sort. Too. And as an American, I needed to see those fake cats, so I didn't have to worry about them anymore.
I know, and I said, you know what? Great, let's just lean into this. Can this just be the norm?
Mm-hmm.
This and, like, us not using child actors anymore.
Uh-huh.
Can this just be, like, the normal? Because I don't need to see a realistic dead animal.
Right.
I know it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I watched too many Indian movies, but, like, I didn't. It's like in biopics of singers, and they're like, and they're singing the songs themselves, and I'm like, I don't care. Yeah. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Another thing that I loved from the director was when Father Hill was pushing the trunk into his house, that scene from, or the view from above, you know, I thought that worked so good. And it came back to that when he was sitting there when the storm was getting ready to start, and he's sitting there drinking coffee or whatever, reading the Bible, and the trunk's open. I thought that was cool. Open. I liked it.
I liked the shot of Ali's Bible in the backpack.
Mm.
It's every parent's worst nightmare, a holy book from a different
Bible home. Good night.
Yeah.
I don't know what your religion is, but you brought the wrong book home.
Exactly.
Heck yeah. All right.
Well, I know what I was going to say. The only time, so I got off on how I would have liked to see the priest be super duper nice and maybe without the box or without it so obvious. So we could actually really be surprised when all this happened. Mm-hmm. But that's just me. Because it did make it more effective when he was like, what's going on? I don't know what's happening. As he's sucking the top of Joe's head, you know,
yeah,
in his creepy way. I was like, does he want the brain? Is he eating brains too? Or is, okay, not. But the thing I liked about him, and this goes along with your comment about addiction, and we also were like, there's so much addiction everywhere, is the only time he actually seemed to me normal and interesting was during the AA meetings.
Hmm. Yes.
I liked those scenes, yeah.
Yeah, and he was talking in a very real, normal way, relatable, not being fake at all. I was interested in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Me too.
Well, that's the thing. I think that he was not getting through to Riley necessarily or like breaking Riley down, but like I think they were connecting.
Yeah.
And that's why I think Riley was so shaken when he just lied about Joe Colley.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, no, I was right. Mm. I was right the first time. Yeah. This is not good.
You sucked me in.
Yeah.
So then does this become...
Also at the AA meetings, they're... when they kept doing the shots of each of them, there were dark doors to the side of them, but on opposite sides.
Oh, that's interesting.
In each of those shots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On Riley, it's on the right side, and on Father Paul, it's on the left side. He also always, and I realize that this would be related to the way that the church is built, but he always comes in the left side door in the church.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
Very interesting.
From the back.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Love and speaking of the church, St. Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
What did St. Patrick do? He drove the snakes off of an island.
Hmm.
What did this guy do? He brought some horrible monster onto an island.
Yep.
The snake. We know it's the snake.
That this monster cannot believe its luck.
Right? Well, and I got to say, the thing I like is because it does have the wings, it is horrible looking, but I understand him thinking it's an angel because I don't know how that looks to him.
Mm-hmm.
And angels of darkness can do the same thing as angels of light.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly. Well, yeah. And, you know, I'm pretty positive that someone put that thing in that cave because it was too far for it to get anywhere at night.
Oh, that's good thinking. I hadn't thought of that.
They couldn't figure out how to kill it, or maybe it can't be killed.
Mm-hmm.
So it got put in this cave where it could never get far enough at night that it wouldn't die. And so it just stayed there.
Until this nut showed
up
mm-hmm.
and took it somewhere where it's going to do great.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see the addiction themes. It's interesting to see the themes of how you lie to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm especially thinking of Father Paul here because it's that little slippery slope and you kind of wonder at this point, I guess everything can't be about the priest scandals, but you're more willing to believe a priest is going to slip and fall like this. Because we know how many people priests lied to and lied to themselves about what they were doing, the seriousness of it.
Mm-hmm.
And look what's going to happen to this community because of this. And then the other thing I think is really interesting is the way we're shown true believers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously Bev is the worst kind of true believer. But there's other very devout people who haven't had their faith put to the test, and they're clearly going to as time comes up.
I'm interested to see his dad. His dad seems very solid in his faith.
Mm-hmm.
And
what happens when these very slow miracles, which no miracle has ever been like this, but they're willing to believe it.
Sure.
This slow improvement goes away.
That's
when his back doesn't work anymore, when her eyes aren't as good.
Exactly. And this is how the cartels do it. We give you these schools and we give you all this stuff.
Yeah.
And do you want that to go away? Because we can make it horrible.
Yeah.
Instead, you can just be poor and miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can have this stuff that we're giving you. How upset is the town really going to be if the only people they're losing are Joe Colley and the guy who sold drugs?
Yeah. And so then it's important to have somebody like the sheriff who's always going to be looking at it with a more critical eye.
Exactly. And you know, you talk about the slippery slope. This is what happens when you don't have a grounding in the truths of the church. If Amen. He was starting from those truths, he could never get to where he is right now. But because he's starting with the truth of, I need to live, I deserve a chance to make things right, I have the power in myself to make things right, I want to do this thing, so it's probably okay. This is an angel. He's starting with all of these suppositions that are not the church. They're mm-hmm. not the faith. They're not God. If he had catechized himself correctly, this couldn't have happened.
And Scott, to come back to one of our favorite themes, he hasn't actually told another person. When he confesses to God, he's just confessing to an empty confessional.
Yeah,
he's not telling.
That's a really easy way to do it.
Yeah, he's not telling any normal person and Mm-mm. saying, "Look at what happened to me." He's hiding it from the beginning.
Yeah,
and mm-hmm. that's when you start off, and it's how many times have you said, you need someone else to hear what you're saying so you can really understand it yourself.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm enjoying hearing you speculate. That's great. So I'm just being quiet and letting you do it.
Well, yeah, that's, mm-hmm. mean, I at about episode 2, I was like, this is Salem's Lot, isn't it? Pretty soon we're going to have everybody lying under the bed during the day and only coming out at night and seeing who are our heroes, right? Because in Salem's Lot, you have the guy, the kid. And at one point, his girlfriend, maybe, but she got caught.
Yeah.
So it's just the guy and the kid by the end.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
David Soul and Lance Kerwin.
If only I had seen that, but I always thought of that guy as being dark-haired. So what can I say?
That it's a mini-series, but it's like 3 mm-hmm. hours long is all. That is seared into my head. I came across a thing on Instagram the other day. It just made me laugh out loud. It said, I've discovered what's wrong with Gen X people. They all read Stephen King before they were old enough to do it.
Amen.
And I laughed because that's exactly,
wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. So Salem's Lot, I watched, I must have been 12. And I read the book too. And I remember it well. It's seared in my memory.
You're so normal.
Yeah. Piece of cake. Yeah.
Well, you hide it well. I was going to say too, when you said the Salem's Lot was about 3-hour miniseries mm-hmm. or so, I think if this was about 4 hours long, it would be much better because.
Yeah.
Well, they spend a lot of time with these monologues, and I'm willing to let people express their feelings, and I'm willing to let people explore ideas.
You're saying that.
But I don't think they need to take half of a show to do it. I feel like we all kind of know the territory we're in, and they would have time to look at some more interesting things or look at those things, kind of like some of the stuff Hannah's saying about the priest. I'm like, you're right, but I didn't think about that. They're not pointing that out enough. They're pointing other things out enough. I mean, we all hate Bev, and for good reason, because she's continually being awful.
Yeah.
But we need to be able to see some of these other people highlighted a little bit more. I mean, I loved some of the shortest scenes have been the most effective. The scene where the father says he went to confession.
I know.
And then he apologizes to his son and says he loves him.
Yeah.
Oh.
That was so affecting, and it took about 2 minutes.
Thomas is playing his father, and that's another Mike Flanagan fave.
Yeah.
He's in a lot of stuff.
And he was from E.T. I was so glad to see that little boy had a career.
I know. I think I like this format, and I think it comes from watching BBC murder mysteries. Things like, Shetland. Have you ever seen Shetland? I can't remember if I talked to you about that before, but what is her name? They're from some novels, and I'm not going to remember the name of the author. But, seasons last like 6 episodes, 6 one-hour episodes, and it tells a story. Like Broadchurch. You remember Broadchurch?
I do, and I'm going to let them do that if they put more into it. And don't spend – I think what it does – okay, let me just say, in this case, the way I
– Sure, Yeah.
Is he's being a little self-indulgent because Netflix gave him this much time.
Yeah.
He didn't have to have someone go through and make one more cut of it or whatever, going, you know, if these two things were tighter, we could make this point like this, just where we're doing, and then we could also do something else that reinforces some of the things like Hannah's saying about the priest or some of the other stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
I totally get that. I don't necessarily feel the same way, but I'm not super critical in that way of Mike Flanagan because I really love his style and like just his stuff in general. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to be as critical. I will say it's interesting though, because one of the best miniseries I've ever seen was the 1994 The Stand with Gary Sinise.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And that miniseries, and they remade it in 2020, obviously not with Gary Sinise.
Come on, people.
Sadly, I think we'll say.
Yeah.
Well, it could only have helped because it was really bad and it missed the point of so many things in that book. But that miniseries was only four episodes,
yeah,
which is interesting because that's a huge book.
But think of what they probably did to get all those ideas in there.
Yeah.
Because I've heard always that it's really good.
And it's amazing and it works. And they really only needed four episodes. So, yeah, I don't dispute that they probably could have cut it down. And it is slow moving.
And I understand liking the style of a director because there are some directors where I hear the director's got a movie out and I'm going to probably see it. Christopher Nolan's one of them. Mm-hmm. And that you got to put up with a lot of time juggling nonsense and this and that, depending on how well he does it in whichever movie. I get it. And there are people that drives crazy. So I totally understand. And I know... I'm like, okay, this guy's just going to keep talking. But I know that when we're done with this, Catholic Answers Focus, which hasn't had a new episode since April, but I don't know if you've ever listened to that, Scott, where Cy Kellett will talk about a movie or a book with somebody. Or,
yeah, I have seen it. Or I have heard it. Yeah, now
well,
and then.
He and Joe, I can't remember his name now, one of my favorite guys on Catholic Answers to answer questions and stuff from people.
Oh, the guy who does Shameless Popery?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me just look him up.
Cool. Did they do this show?
Yeah.
Great.
Hold on. Let me. Yeah. Joe Heschmeyer. Okay, so Cy Kellett and Joe Heschmeyer talked about this show, and I can send you the link to the episode.
Oh, I can definitely find it.
And waiting. Yep. But and Rose kind of just looked through the transcript just enough to see until she got to the point where it would be spoiling it for us. And one of the things they talked about was so much monologuing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a style you're either going to like or not like. You know, and some things like, you know, Babette's Feast, there may not be a lot of monologues, but there's a lot of slow silences and people walking across fields and people will be bored stiff by that. I'm not in that sense.
Yeah.
So I get it. But just for me, I'm thinking about the stuff we've been talking about. And I can't remember now some of the stuff that Rose and I were talking about, but we're like, this could have been richer.
Mm. Sure.
In 7 hours.
Yeah.
He could have done more with it. And not to say that by the time we get to the end, I don't go, oh, I get it. This was all fantastic. You know, we needed the long talks and everything. But I just feel like it was a little self-indulgent from my point of view because I don't know his style.
I think so, that's, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't necessarily feel that way, but it was a little slow. And I don't think it's unfair to say that because he does have a really long leash on Netflix stuff.
Yeah,
because because he's made them a ton of money. I mean, The Haunting of Hill House was huge. Yeah. Everybody was watching that, and I think with good reason. Obviously, Rose watched one episode and said two thumbs down,
but she won't even read the book. So you know,
which if you love the book and that's why you're hoping for a good adaptation of that, you shouldn't watch.
Well,
the show.
And I did. You told me that
because it's not the same, but it's still really good. And it's very, very spooky.
So
very good.
I wanted to mention was the other thing it's looking at besides addiction is age and infirmity.
Yes.
How do we act when our bodies are not doing what we want them to do?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not our fault.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big theme. And I never would have thought of pairing it with addiction. But, of course, there you're fighting your own impulses, too, in a different way.
Yeah.
Mm.
and how do we take it to God or live with it ourselves or whatever it is. And the other thing when I was talking about true belief is, I think the question it's raising is, what do you do when you're faced with it? I mean, we all have our own true beliefs.
Yeah.
Hopefully we're not Bev. but, or the priest.
Okay, no, that's fine. You don't like strong women. I get it.
No, because they're too like me. I look at her and I see myself in the mirror and I just don't like it. What can I, you know, we're the same person. But it's that thing of, I'll be interested to see if the sheriff can come up with more reasons for his true belief. He's not interested in the miracles. He's already found what he wants. He's a convert. Totally get it. Mm-hmm. He had to go through that already. But when we're faced with somebody going, don't you judge God, drag these dead bodies out of here. I don't care how much shock someone is in and how strong she's a strong person. And I guess those two people weren't. Well, one of them's the mayor of the freaking town.
Although
he's been through his daughter's paralysis and done all this stuff. So
we already saw on the beach with the cats how he deals with stuff. Did you hear his wishy-washy? Maybe there were a bunch of baby sharks.
You're right.
Sheriff Hassan is talking about, we got to get these cats on a fire. We don't know what killed them.
Yeah.
It could be contagious. It's unlikely, but we just got to be safe.
And yeah.
He's not even addressing whether that's a thing that should happen. Mm. He's just nattering on about his, like, maybe this happened. Gosh, well, remember when this happened? He's not a strong leader.
You know what and sharks mean. Sharks mean fish.
No, exactly. Bunch of baby sharks.
Yeah.
Like they were baby sharks.
Yeah, they were baby sharks.
Well, because they didn't crush the cat.
Yeah, yeah. Just took a little bite out of every cat.
That's good.
But so this is what we will see, I guess, is what do you do? I mean, because the school teacher clearly will not be giving in.
Right.
The doctor, I feel like, won't be giving in.
Oh, definitely not.
You know.
And it's interesting, well, speaking of which, is probably Father Paul's daughter.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned based that. Based on some clues. We talked about it pre-recording. Yeah. But
I thought we were. Okay.
No, but based on some clues, that's probably her father.
Yeah. So he already has a problem.
Yeah, he already has a problem. Exactly.
I want to see. Okay, this ends with a very surprising scene to me where poor Riley is being attacked by the vampire and the priest just shuts the door, you know, and you're just like, come on. And I'm like, he can't die.
Right.
He's the main character. And I'm like, so unless he's made to drink the blood.
That's the thing.
He won't become a vampire. But even if he is, how will he act as opposed to Father Paul?
Well,
because he's trying to live a real life still.
Right. Because if he does become a vampire, though, then this is a new addiction that he has to fight. And will he finally fight it? And will he sacrifice this time what he wouldn't last time?
Yeah. But I was just thinking, because he truly believes, he's willing to be convinced, but he truly believes that religion is nonsense.
Right.
So this, he might allow this to sway his belief because he's different than a Beverly character or a Bev character. He is open-minded. He will consider other things.
Right. Well, and it's interesting that you brought up Storm of the Century because in that one, they let themselves be convinced and then it actually shows you, like, 10 years later, what did that do to everyone? Mm,
yeah.
Really terrible.
Okay.
Everyone is dealing with it really terribly. Mm-hmm. It shattered lives because they were like, I think we made the wrong choice.
Mm-hmm.
And how are these people going to react? Are they going to be like, we want this to be fine, so we're just going to go with it? Or is it going to haunt them and they're eventually going to realize.
Or are they going to say,
this is untenable.
Stake me.
Yeah.
Or whatever, whatever has come up with as the way to handle it. Maybe that's what the Muslim guy adds to it also.
Yeah.
Very good. All right. Well, I'm excited for the next episode.
Yeah, me too.
You bet. Thank you for
being
here.
I'm definitely more interested than I was before. So good job, everybody.
Good.
My mic's
only three more hours to go.
Ha 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 ha. exactly.
Yeah, well, for the, I got Rose on the other side. So
yes, yes.
I know. She'll strip it away immediately. She's such a Bev.
Yes, but the worst thing is she's so often right.
Mm.
You sound like someone talking about Bev.
I told you I love a strong leader.
Oh, that's okay. Great. All right. Well, let's stop her there.
Okay.
We're a little over an hour. So anyway, thank you, Hannah, for being here. I can't wait to hear you next time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's rejoin this conversation here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. And it's great because we had, Mark and I had just totally stalled out on the Mike Flanagan shows. I think because we were like, what is Midnight Mass going to be like? It just feels like weirder than his other stuff.
Is it?
No, it's not. Okay. But yeah, so we just kind of like hadn't watched it yet, but then not that there's a reason for this, but we kind of didn't want to watch his other shows past that until we watched Midnight Mass, even though they're not like in the same universe or anything. At all.
Very good. Very
there's
good.
There's no plan universe.
Yeah.
There is one thing I have to mention, and this is just somebody forcing the story and not wanting to do their homework. Don't we all have fond memories of Ash Wednesday, a fast day when you can't have any meat, of the picnic that you have after the mass where you receive the ashes where you can all have barbecue together?
Yeah, everyone's having
and hot dogs.
So and beers, yeah.
And beer. It's so funny because the thing that you think is required, the mass, is not required.
Right.
Right.
But the fasting is.
And the ashes are, yeah.
You the ashes are not required, but the fasting is.
You have
is.
To fast.
Yeah,
I know. I was going, is this the same day? The horse is like, I think they just left and got the picnic basket out, man. No, it is the same day. Out,
they all had marks on their foreheads, yep.
And they went, Monsignor Pruitt started this. He thought it was a nice tradition. And at that time, at that time, I was like, oh, they got this so wrong.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing. Yeah.
But now I'm looking at what Hannah said, and I'm going, I think Monsignor Pruitt just wanted a picnic.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't give him any credit.
He's a terrible priest, and he's an island with no oversight.
Oh, and they never change him out.
No. Mm-hmm. So it can slide as deep as he lets it go. And also, that dog's not going to poison itself, Mom. You got to have a picnic.
You got to have a picnic.
Well, that I understood why the picnic happened.
Oh,
I knew the point of the picnic. Also, so we can look at people suspiciously and get little snippets about them. But,
oh, that's
but
great.
It was mostly the dog, so Joe could cry and go, he never hurt anyone. Old like Bowser, or whatever his name was. Yeah.
Very nice. That's the best.
What did he ever do to any of you but love you?
A little dog.
Oh, love it. All right.
Oh, man.
Oh, poor puppy. All right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see you both in a couple of weeks. And thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye, all.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.